Boy, I don't know about the Seattle Times headline, everybody. Seattle, say bye to snow. Rain is on the way. Well, I don't know about them, but I drove through snow to get to work today. Don't know if it's still falling because it's dark outside. But welcome, everybody. The radio program, a record of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, this and every day of the work week from 6 till 9. A little highlight show the hour before. Look who's filling in for Philip J. Vannevort III. That's Big Mike.
Good morning, John. Great to be here with you. And like I've been sharing with my audience on the Ari Hoffman Show during the afternoons, this is kind of like a weird, accidentally bittersweet kind of day, because this is probably one of the last times you and I will have the opportunity to work directly together. And I'm the one man band today. So it's just you and I. I got you all to myself.
Oh my
so
goodness.
I'm going to treasure this day.
And the listeners and the callers. How about that?
Yeah.
And speaking of callers, you can always call us or you can text us, because we love hearing from you at same number, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. Big announcement today, 8 o'clock, where, as most of you know by now, I announced on Wednesday that as of April, I will be stepping away, retiring from radio, leaving this microphone after more than 30 years. And today at 8 o'clock, I am telling you what I'm going to be doing next, which means I have 2 hours to find a job. I better hurry during the commercial breaks. I don't know if people are answering their phones at this hour, but anyway, I will give you a little bit of a hint, everyone. I'm not just taking a new job. I am beginning a new career. Yes. At the age of 48, I am beginning a new career. Self-identified as 48. I am beginning a new career. So that will happen in less than 2 hours. And yes, if you can, be here for that announcement. I absolutely love how the Seattle Times is freaking out about the Trump administration. I mean, this is wonderful. Here, just one example, and I've got a bunch of examples for you today. Headline, Trump dismisses Seattle-based U.S. attorney as part of nationwide purge. Tessa Gorman, appointed U.S. attorney for Western Washington last January after serving 3 years as interim, has been dismissed at the direction of President Donald Trump. Emily Langley, formerly on Como 4 News for many years, by the way. Emily Langley, spokesperson for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Seattle, confirmed that Tessa Gorman was terminated this week amid reports of a purge of top federal prosecutors by Trump's administration. Okay. Purge indicates, get rid of them all! I want them all out of here! Excuse me. That's what every administration does. It's almost like the Seattle Times saying, you know, Robert F. Kennedy confirmed as HHS secretary as the president continues to purge the federal cabinet. Every president has his own cabinet. Every president has his own U.S. attorneys. These are presidential appointees. So when you replace the U.S. attorneys, as Bill Clinton fired them all, again, it's not like you're firing them, because they're not expecting to hold their job in a new administration. You know, every once in a while, there'll be a holdover for whatever reason. But most U.S. attorneys, like most cabinet officials, like most high-ranking federal appointees, are serving at the pleasure of the administration. When a new administration comes in, they bring their own people. They want people in those offices that reflect the views and values and the agenda of the president. So, again, I just love this. Let me, this article in the Seattle Times, continue reading, because it shows the bias here. Gorman, Tessa Gorman, who has now been purged by Donald Trump, had replaced Brian Moran, who was appointed U.S. attorney by Trump and confirmed by the Senate in 2019. He stepped down after Biden was elected in 2020, a tradition when a new administration takes over. So instead of saying that the tradition continues, it's Donald Trump's carrying out a purge. Again, quoting from the article, it is not clear why Trump chose to terminate Gorman, who was appointed acting U.S. attorney in 2021 after then-President Joe Biden appointed Nick Brown to the job in August of that year. Brown left the job in June of 2023 after he announced his candidacy for state attorney general, which, of course, he won. So you just have to shake your head in the same article where they talk about Tessa Gorman is going to be replaced. She's been purged. But Brian Moran, who had been Trump's U.S. attorney, well, he stepped down after Biden was elected. Okay, maybe you don't see the inconsistencies there. Pretty much everyone else should be able to notice it. So, yes, this is good news. There are three people I know of. Would you like a scoop? Big Mike, would you like a news scoop? Shall we
absolutely
give the people a news scoop?
Spill the tea.
At 10 and a half minutes after 6 in the morning? Okay. No, there are at least three people who are vying to fill this role of U.S. attorney in the new administration. One of them is a former state representative from Issaquah. His name is Paul Graves. Paul is a very respected attorney, was a very respected legislator. He heads Enterprise Washington, which is a pro-business organization out there. There is a second candidate for the job. Mark Lamb is the former mayor of Bothell and attorney with a prominent law firm in Seattle. His name has come up. His name is being bandied about. And Brian Moran, his name has come up as well. Now, as for how aggressively are these people pushing for it, I don't know. I just know that three names have arisen, have come up as potential replacements, and those are them. So if you want to know anything about U.S. attorney and you read the Seattle Times, all you know is who's been purged. But if you would like to know who might be replacing her, they're not going to get that from the Seattle Times. You have to listen to 570 KVI. Yeah? So there you have it. We have a lot to discuss all day today. We have a lot to discuss into the afternoon. I mean, it is that kind of a news day. There hasn't been a slow news day since the election. There has not been a slow news day since this election. I love the fight that has broken out between J.D. Vance and Pope Francis. Now, Pope Francis has been admitted to the hospital for tests overnight. We hope he will be okay. He's getting up there in years. I mean, when Joe Biden visited the Vatican, he called him Sonny. I mean, that's how old this Pope is. He's been there for a while.
88 years old, the Pope is.
88. Doesn't look a day over 84, but yes, he's been with us a while. Anyway, we hope he'll be fine, but he basically picked a fight with J.D. Vance and with the administration and with Tom Homan, the border czar. Tom Homan is a lifelong Catholic, and he went right back at the Pope when the Pope has angrily and stridently attacked the mass deportation program. He says, you're creating a crisis. And, of course, the polite response to the Pope is, sir, you're a little late getting here. The crisis was caused by opening the border. Okay, we've had crises. Did I say crisis? I'm sorry. I meant to say crises happening throughout the United States since the border was open. Drug crises, crime, violent crime breaking out, overloaded social services, overloaded schools. You name all of the problems that have, you know, human trafficking, presumably that's a priority, something that you care about. All these things got worse, in some cases dramatically worse, when the Biden administration, by design, it wasn't like, oh, shoot, we blundered, we made a mistake. No, by design, they opened up the southern border, and this is the part where you should and ought to be furious. They kept the border open and kept rushing in illegals after these problems began to worsen, and they knew these problems were worsening. They knew these things. They knew the fentanyl was coming over. They knew that human trafficking was increasing. They knew the border towns were completely inundated. They knew that crime was a problem and getting worse because criminal gangs and others were with criminal records pouring across the border. They knew all this. They kept the border open anyway. That is just despicable. That is the previous administration. And at the very least, what we can do is stop the damage. And so Tom Homan has made it clear. We are carrying out mass deportation, beginning with criminals who are in this country illegally. Is that a bad thing? Getting rid of criminals who are in the country illegally? Secondly, we're going after security risks because we've got security risks in this country. We know this. They're going after them, too. Thirdly, there's over a million, in fact, 1.3 million people in this country illegally who have received due process and have been ordered out of the country by an immigration judge. 1.3 million individuals have been told by an immigration judge, you've overstayed your welcome or your visa or you shouldn't have been here in the first place, and you are hereby ordered to depart the United States. And they're just ignoring the order. They're just blowing it off. They need to go. And the Pope is calling this a crisis. No, no, no. This is the remedy to the crisis, Your Excellency. This is how you fix a crisis. And so nothing to apologize for. But anyway, there's a side story to all this. J.D. Vance and the Pope are colliding about the meaning of the term Christian love. What is Christian love? You know, there is love, of course, but what is Christian love in particular? J.D. Vance has one definition. The Pope has another. So you know what we're going to do during the 7 o'clock hour?
What's that?
We're going to read in their own words, not my interpretation, their respective definitions of Christian love. And we're going to ask our listeners to weigh in on who has it right.
I like that. And that's perfect for this Valentine's Day.
It is wonderful. Yes. Did you remember to tell your significant other happy Valentine's Day before you left the house this morning, Big Mike?
Absolutely. Huh? After I got her up at 3:30 this morning to get ready for work. Yeah. It's like, yeah, happy Valentine's. Yeah, go to work. Leave me alone. I want to go back to sleep.
Yes. No, sent a text to Lisa. Be my Valentine. So, guys, I know a lot of people think it's kind of a made up, you know, people making a big deal over Valentine's Day. Believe me, it is a big deal to them, to the women in our lives. Make sure you don't forget. Remember her on Valentine's Day, okay? All right, you got 19 and a half minutes after 6 o'clock. I wonder if Big Mike can fill the shoes of Philip J. Vandervoort III when it comes to the social media sweep. Yes, he's sagely nodding his head. Yes, don't worry, it's covered. All right.
Fill the shoes. I like that, by the way. Good pun work, John.
P-H-I-L the shoes. All right. Hey, it's 20 minutes after 6. Good morning. It's Friday. Okay, now here's a song that's had three shelf lives. First, the Isley Brothers, Twist and Shout. And then, of course, the Beatles cover of Twist and Shout, which became a huge hit in, I think it was 64, 65. And then, of course, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where he was singing this song. He was lip syncing this during the parade scene where he would commandeered a float. Anyway, fun movie.
Absolutely. Iconic scene. Iconic movie of the 80s.
The 80s were fun, you know? Back to the Future, so. Ferris Bueller, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, today on the John Carlson Show.
Ah, see, there we go.
Played by Big Mike. What is going on in the social media world?
Well, TikTok has returned to the Apple and Google app stores in the United States. The Twitter 20, I heard it on the X, the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. This from the Associated Press. TikTok has returned to app stores of Apple and Google in the U.S. after President Donald Trump delayed the enforcement of a TikTok ban. Mm-hmm. Now, TikTok, which is operated by Chinese technology firm ByteDance, mm-hmm. was removed from Apple and Google's app stores back on January 18th to comply with a law that requires ByteDance to divest the app or be banned in the U.S. The popular social media app, which I do not have on my phone. I don't need Chinese spyware on my phone, which has over 170 million American users, previously suspended its services in the U.S. for a day before restoring service following assurances from Trump that he would postpone banning the app. The TikTok service suspension briefly prompted thousands of users to migrate to RedNote, a Chinese social media app, while calling themselves quote unquote TikTok refugees. The TikTok app became available to download again in the U.S. Apple App Store and Google Play Store after nearly a month of not being available. On Trump's first day in office, he signed an executive order to extend the enforcement of a ban on TikTok to April 5th.
So are these people undocumented TikTok users?
Yes, undocumented TikTokers. Get them out. Get them out. Where's Tom Holman where you need him?
So we'll see what becomes of TikTok. I think TikTok needs to be sold.
Yeah.
And I think it needs to be sold to an American company. And I know they're going back and forth. Should the government have an ownership in this or not? But the bottom line is, I know that one government should not have any involvement in TikTok anymore, and that is the Chinese government.
Absolutely. And we seem to part ways with the president a bit. Trump has suggested that TikTok could be jointly owned, with half of its ownership being American. And again, here on the John Carlson show, it should be more than that. And I'm with you, John. I don't use this app. I occasionally use like a desktop version to get viral videos and clips for the show and things like that. But yeah, I just don't want Chinese spyware on my phone. I'm sorry.
Just the potential for it. And
again,
they're getting the data of moms and dads through their teenage kids' smartphone.
Exactly.
Okay. They get the family's data that way. And that's pretty clever, but it's also very underhanded. And that's why I'm still not on TikTok.
Right. Right.
You know, I will look, there's a couple of great sites I like looking at online, Libs of TikTok. That's always a fun
site
to go to. But I'm not going to go on the app and use it.
Right. Absolutely. And speaking of Libs of TikTok, they have a significant presence on X, formerly Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I have a couple posts from the Doge account on X and why following Doge on X.
The Department of Government Efficiency under Elon Musk. Doge.
Yes.
Okay.
Today, the Department of Education terminated 29 DEI training grants totaling $101 million.
Oh, good Lord.
One sought to train teachers to, quote, help students understand/interrogate the complex histories involved in oppression and help students recognize areas of privilege and power on an individual and collective basis, end quote.
Why don't we replace all of those programs with a single standard? Treat other people the way you want to be treated.
Absolutely.
And, just put that on a piece of paper, send it to all these people. It costs you maybe a buck and a half instead of over $100 million. From now on, when it comes to human relations, what you say is treat other people the way you want to be treated. Treat teachers the way you would want to be, the way you would want it if you were the teacher and they were the student. Treat people the way you want to be treated. Treat fellow students the way you want to be treated. This is not complex. And maybe that's why it's rejected, because it's so obvious. It's common sense. But you know what else it is? It's fundamental.
There you go.
It's fundamental. You have a society where people treat others the way they want to be treated. The golden rule, unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You're going to have a pretty nice society. You're going to have a more communal society where people look after each other, not the government looking after each other, after everybody, but where people look after each other. Treat others the way you want to be treated. What a concept.
What a concept. And that's your social media sweep for this hour. I'll have some more for you in the next hour.
Oh, good. And when we come back again, we have exploding heads all over the left side of the political spectrum over DEI. Latest, the Fred Hutchison Cancer Research Center. Wait until you hear how the Seattle Times covered that story. That and a lot more. Coming your way as the commute with Carlson continues. So I got a question for you, Big Mike. It's not a trick question.
Okay.
When should people get a raise?
You mean like time of year or interval frequency, something like that?
No. When would a pay raise be called for?
I would say usually in a couple different instances. I would say obviously when there's like a promotion situation, you move up in status or position.
You know, when you do good work.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Merit.
That makes sense to me. Do a good job, you get a raise in pay.
Exactly.
Do a competent job, you keep your job. Do a great job, you get a promotion, you get a raise in pay.
100%.
Okay.
Good so, pay for good work.
Using that criteria,
yeah.
Should our state legislators be getting a raise?
How about no?
Okay. Because it's going to happen.
Right.
Now, you think, well, all right, it'll, you know, 3% cost of living, you know, raise. You know, I mean, the Social Security, the recipients are going to get a slight raise. I think they're going to get a slight raise.
I believe so.
But a 16% raise? That's pretty extraordinary.
Well, in using my criteria for earlier, that would be a significant jump. That would be like if I jump from board op to show producer, or if I jump from show producer to show host, something like that. That's a sizable jump to earmark a jump in status.
Okay.
Not like just because.
So the reason I bring this up is that state legislators are part-time employees. Okay, it's a lot of work, and a lot of legislators, one of the reasons they run for county commission or county council is that the workload ain't much tougher as a county council person, but it's a full-time job and it's closer to home. But legislators currently earn, I'm rounding up just a little bit, $62,000 a year. Okay, $61,997. Call it 62. $62,000 a year. In July, their pay would go up to $67,700. So you go from $62,000 a year to $67,700. And one more year after that, it goes up to $72,500. This is for a part-time job as a state legislator.
We are in the wrong line of work, my friend.
Leaders of the four caucuses, I call them cocci, you know, when you use the plural, will continue to earn more because they're in leadership. But I'm wondering how many of our listeners knew this. Did you know that legislators are going to get a 16% bump in their pay from $62,000 a year to $72,500 in a year's time or within a year and a half? That is because a commission, by the way, an unpaid commission, a salary commission, which is stacked, if you will, they have, quote, residents randomly selected from the state's 10 congressional districts, plus representatives of organized labor, higher education, and business. Randomly selected suggests, let's take a lottery and just randomly select names. No, it doesn't work that way. Most of the people who are on the independent citizen commission that sets the legislature's wage are leaning in the direction of a salary hike already. Now, if there is a reason why these guys deserve a pay raise that is four times greater than inflation, and someone would like to give me the reason for that, I'm all ears. Love to hear it. And I know a lot of legislators, and it's a very honorable calling. But you know what? City council people, for the most part, they work part-time too. They don't get $70,000 a year. They usually get about half or less than that because you don't want people running for local offices who are doing it as a full-time avocation. What you want are people who are stepping forward to serve their community, public servant. They are serving their community. And after doing so, they step away. Makes sense. And that way you have, you know, new blood, but you also have people who go into office for a purpose. They want to serve their community, not just build a career for themselves. This is especially bad when you see people running for school board so they can run for something else. You know, you just want people who want better schools. That's the ideal, and not just the ideal. That's really the intent. That is the purpose of these offices. That's why they don't pay a whole lot of money. You don't want people to say, I'm running for legislature for the money. I could use the big bump in pay. You don't want people like that.
They call it public service for a reason. You're serving the community. Yeah. It's not intended to be a lucrative career move.
There's going to be, interestingly, there's pay raises for judges too, but they're less than half of what the legislature is getting. But and you know, the governor gets a pay bump. Bob Ferguson will his pay. Well, and he just took the job, of course. He's currently earning about $204,000. He'll get a bump up to $235,000 or $234,000. Our Attorney General Nick Brown is currently earning $193,000. He'll be earning $221,000. And you're thinking, well, that's really outrageous. But at least those are full-time jobs. At least those are jobs where you're pulling in a full work day every day, really more than just a full work day. Some of these jobs are almost round the clock. So I understand why they are getting a pay raise. I understand those kinds of, even though that's pretty generous, but state legislators, we would be, there are some people, you need to know this, who want the Washington legislature to be a full-time body. They want them legislating round the clock, round the calendar. They don't want a, what we currently have, a legislative session of 105 days on odd-numbered years, like this year, 25. And then next year, there'll be a 60-day session, you know, in the even-numbered years. Again, they do that so that we don't have full-time, round-the-clock politicking. And there are those who want to escalate pay and want to keep Olympia going round the clock. It's not how it's supposed to work. For one thing, if it became full time, then you would just have full time politicians in Olympia. Not good. What you want are people who are community leaders. And part of their community leadership is they're willing to step into public office for a few years. And they serve the public. They'll come up for election every couple of years in the House, every 4 years in the Senate. And they go back. That's why I wish we had official term limits for our legislature. We have term limits for some of our local offices, but we should have term limits for our state offices as well. So we preserve, or maybe I should say we restore, our tradition of having people serve in local office who are there for a purpose, serving their community. Because the minute you get away from that, the minute you get into full-time politicking, that's when the big daddy interest groups, okay, that's when the powerful interest groups, they start running the show. And frankly, they're already running the show to a disturbing extent. You want people who are going to be representing the people who live, the residents in their communities. You don't want people representing the interest groups that are based in Olympia. All right, with that said, it is 48 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Let's check in with my good buddy Lars Larson in Un Momento as the commute continues. Sounds like it was written by a Republican legislator. Get me out of here, said the Joker to the thief, talking to a colleague on the other side of the aisle. All right. What's Lars Larson, our noon to three host, up to this First Amendment Friday?
I'm just getting ready for, let's see, we've got First Amendment Friday, we've got Valentine's Day, we got a few more inches of snow overnight, which means that most of my end of the Pacific Northwest is shut down, schools out, all the rest of that. And there's a real concern, I mean, among all the other 1,001 things that President Trump has to tackle, do you remember last year when the FBI came out with crime data and they told the public with a straight face, yep, crime's down, violent crime especially, it's down. Don't pay no attention to what your eyes are telling you. We're telling you violent crime is down. And it was a lie because what had happened was two things. Number one, fewer police agencies were reporting less data from even the agencies that were still reporting. And the FBI just counted the numbers up and said, see, we don't have as much violent crime under Joe Biden. And it was a lie. It was a gigantic distortion. They actually said crime was down when in fact it was up. And that's one of the things that has to, if they don't dismantle the entire FBI, the way the Department of Education, EPA, and others are being simply dismantled, then the FBI has to be fixed, and they should not be allowed to lie to the American public.
Well, the other thing is that, because we saw this during the presidential debate with David Muir, when he was correcting Donald Trump and about, well, the FBI statistics say otherwise. The FBI statistics were actually flawed because they weren't including numbers from large cities and other places. When you look at the National Crime Victims Survey, which is the gold standard, if you will, of crime reporting, no, crime was up. And when Trump said crime was up, he was correct. And by the way, why is David Muir debating Donald Trump? He's supposed to be moderating the debate.
And David Muir should be smarter, because both of those data come from the federal government. The FBI's Uniform Crime Report is a result of police agencies like Seattle and Portland reporting crime numbers. And agencies had done a lot less of that after the pandemic, staffing and other issues. But you're right, that survey they did also comes out of the DOJ. They would call random households and effectively do a poll. Has anybody in your house been the victim of a crime? What kind of crime was it? And they gather data. When those two numbers don't match, it tells you there's a flaw in the data. The FBI knew it. So when you knowingly tell somebody something that you know isn't true, then I call that a lie.
I think well stated, Lars Larson. When you know it's not true, stop saying it. Ideally, you should change your mind when you know it's not true. You shouldn't just be repeating the falsehood. You're absolutely on point. Thanks, Lars Larson. This and every day of the work week, of course, from noon to three. When we come back, what is the proper definition of Christian love? Pope Francis has one definition. J.D. Vance, a Catholic convert, has another. I'm going to ask you, which one you think is closer to the mark? Have you text in your messages? 206-421-5757. I'll read those definitions in their own words right around the corner as the commute continues this Friday. All right, back at it. John Carlson here, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hour number two. Thank you very much. We're an hour away from the second big announcement this week. Of course, most of you know by now, I announced on Wednesday that come April, I will be retiring from radio, stepping back from this microphone after more than 30 years. And boy, have I loved it. And I mentioned that I would be telling you why I was stepping away on Friday's show, that there were a couple things that had to happen before I would feel comfortable letting you know. And in about an hour's time, you will know. So thank you very much for being with me today. I really appreciate it and looking forward to that announcement. But until then, we're just packed to the gills with stuff. All right. You're hearing all this media coverage about how divisive and unpopular Elon Musk is, and Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency, unrooting and spotlighting waste. All these demonstrations, all these complaints, all these claims that Elon Musk is trying to take over the government, get access to people's personal data in these vast government computer databases, et cetera, et cetera. Is that message by the critics of Donald Trump and Elon Musk resonating? Is it connecting? Not among swing state voters in swing states. I mean, among people on the left. I mean, they're neurotic already. And so, of course, you know, they're falling for it. But very interesting. Axios has a very interesting article on a focus group done of swing voters in Arizona. And in this focus group, all of whom voted for Joe Biden in 2020, but switched to Donald Trump in November. So in other words, they all voted for Biden against Trump in 2020, but they all voted for Trump in 2024. They like what Trump is doing. They like the disruption of the status quo in the federal government. One of the people in the focus group says it's what's needed to get America back on track. Several people in the focus group, again, this is in Arizona. They chose Arizona because it was a swing state. Went for Biden in 2020, went for Trump in 2024. Some would like to see him do more sooner to rein in consumer costs. But several said they don't mind that his early actions haven't focused on inflation. They said they can be patient if those prices don't come down because they have trust that they will come down. Several have said that they doubt the warnings that tariffs are going to translate into long-term price increases. They tend to see it the opposite way, that maybe there will be short-term increases, but long-term benefits. Several in the focus group expressed views that waste, fraud, and abuse are so prevalent that entire government agencies could be slashed, even eliminated, without hurting services. The voters participated in two online focus groups that were conducted just a few days ago. February 11th. Today, of course, is the 14th. They included, once again, 11 Arizona residents who backed Trump last year after they voted for Biden and against Trump in 2020. 8 of the voters are political independents. 2 were Republicans. 1 was a Democrat. Now, a focus group is not necessarily a statistically significant sample like a poll, but the responses give you an idea about how people are thinking, the depth of their thinking, the intensity of their thinking. And one woman, Courtney, she's 34, in the focus group said, "I agree. We need the Constitution. We need rules and procedures. At the same time, how are we going to make big changes? Is someone like Trump being unconventional? We need to be unconventional. We need him to be doing these things, to be making these big changes for things to happen." Jonas, 55, said, "I like how he's cleaning house in the government." Anne, who is 54, said, "I approve because I believe he's transparent. We haven't had that in the last 4 years. Other respondents were supportive of Trump's executive orders on immigration, and they liked his efforts to eliminate DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives throughout government and in corporate America. 8 of the respondents, they were then asked about Elon Musk and Doge. 8 of the 11 respondents said they approve of what he's doing. Very few of them had concerns that he's being motivated by personal gain or that his status as the world's richest man presents conflicts of interest. So in other words, the Democrats keep flogging this, oh, he's just trying to get richer. You know, he's worth $400 billion. That's with a B, $400 billion. No, I don't think he's in it for the money. I think he's in it for the chain. The number of executive orders Trump has issued in his first weeks is unprecedented. And you know what? This group likes it. The bottom line is the swing voters are delighted by Elon Musk and Donald Trump's government house cleaning. The company that moderated the focus groups reported back, "The prospect of a looming constitutional crisis is completely inconceivable to them. Trump, J.D. Vance, Elon Musk should be ecstatic about the results of the Arizona focus group feedback, and Democrats should be scared to death." Again, these are swing state voters, all of whom voted for Biden in 2020 and then switched to Donald Trump in 2024. That's interesting. All right. Yesterday, I told you about how Pope Francis had come out strongly against the U.S. position on mass deportations. He said the mass deportations to Pope Francis are, quote, a major crisis taking place in the United States, close quote. Now, my take on it, of course, is that, no, they are repairing a crisis. The mass deportations are a response to the crises caused by mass illegal immigration that was created on purpose by the previous administration. But the Pope made it kind of personal. He said that it's just downright unchristian. And that is where his view of what he calls Christian love clashes with J.D. Vance. He specifically singled out view of Christian love voiced by Vice President Vance. Now, here is how J.D. Vance defines Christian love. He says, "There's this old school concept, and I think it's a very Christian concept, by the way." Again, quoting him, this is the vice president. "You love your family, then you love your neighbor, then you love your community, then you love your fellow citizens in your own country. And then after that, you can focus and prioritize the rest of the world." A lot of the far left politically has completely inverted that. They seem to hate the citizens of their own country and care more about people outside their own borders. That is no way to run a society. Now, here is what Pope Francis said in a direct response to J.D. Vance. "Christian love is not a concentric expansion of interests that little by little extend to other persons and groups." In other words, the human person is not a mere individual, relatively expansive, with some philanthropic feelings. The human person is a subject with dignity who, through the constitutive relationships with all, especially with the poorest, can gradually mature in his identity and vocation. Which one of those rings true to you? Who's got it right? Text us. Tell me what you think. 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. Now, the Holy Father brings up later in his statement, the Good Samaritan. But the Good Samaritan let us remember, was somebody who was responding to someone in distress. It was someone who has robbed and beaten and left to die by the side of the road. And you remember, as Jesus told the parable, that a priest, a rabbi, saw the poor man on the side of the road, crossed to the other side of the road, kept walking. Then a Levite, which is from the one of the 12 tribes that is supposed to be focused on spiritual health and tradition. The Levite sees the man beaten and robbed, and he crossed to the other side and kept walking. Then a Samaritan, who is seen as out of sorts and not welcome in popular society, nor were Jews welcome by Samaritan. A Samaritan comes by, he sees the man who's beaten and left to die, and he goes and helps him. Okay, of course, everyone should do that. The man, the victim, was in distress. But when it comes to love, you can love your fellow man, but you can place priority on your own children and on your parents and on others. So the Pope was very critical of this idea of, well, it's not like you family and then neighbor and then community and then, you know, people in your country and everything. It's not like you have a descending order of love. And what J.D. Vance is saying is, in your daily life, your children, your spouse is front and center. You love your family, then you love your neighbor, then you love your community. So who do you think has it right? I'd love to hear what you think. And so we are taking your text messages or your phone calls, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. Text us who you think has it right. And I know that you could say there's elements where they both are making a good point. I get that. But who's more real? Whose version of applied Christian love? Not theoretical Christian love, but applying Christian love to daily living. Who's got it right? All right. As the suspense builds, where will the KVI listening audience land on this one? We got Big Mike ready with a social media sweep coming right around the corner. You are listening to the Friday edition of the John Carlson Show with a special announcement coming your way in about 20 minutes or so, 40 minutes or so, 40 minutes or so on the radio program of record. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Yes, as a way of gliding into the early morning hours here this Friday, Led Zeppelin helps get you there quicker. All right, Big Mike, what's going on in the social media world? Robert Plant wants to know.
Absolutely. Well, as the sun decides to start to slowly, the sun is not coming up. It's still very, very dark outside. The social media sweep, the Twitter 20, I heard it on the X, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Got a couple disparate feel-good stories I'd like to share here on the Twitter 20. This first from our friends over at We Heart Seattle and Andrea Suarez. She recently posted a video of one of their large cleanups, and the caption says, "Drug addicts helping drug addicts stay sober, a method for those in recovery more than a century old. Today, these fellows hiked out 12,000 pounds of trash from a Seattle urban forest bordering Elliott Bay in order to give back."
What do they call that?
Urban forest bordering Elliott Bay. That's according to Andrea Suarez at We Heart Seattle.
A veritable Eden waiting to happen. Wow, exactly. Urban forest.
Yeah, I thought you would like that. Now, we like Andrea, and we like the work that We Heart Seattle does.
We love Andrea. We love We Heart Seattle because they're actually trying to solve a problem rather than make money from continuing a problem.
Absolutely. Switching gears a little bit, it being a Valentine's Day, and we're talking about love and Christian love and love for our significant others. We also love dogs. We love our pets. And I know that even though we are rocking Husky Purple here on a Friday, I have a tweet here from WSU News. Wazoo researchers are using precision medicine to uncover hidden genetic mutations in pets, helping veterinarians predict, diagnose, and prevent deadly conditions before they strike. Researchers at Washington State University found that quality time with a pup improves your mental health. In this study, first-year students would have 7 sessions with a therapy dog. The study was conducted on students who had family pets back home. Their finding shows that students had lowered stress and depression afterwards after spending time with a therapy dog. So I thought that was sweet. I like dogs. I don't have dogs myself. We're cat people at our place, but I look at dogs almost like children. Like I like to mess around and play with dogs and then leave them with their owners when we leave for the day.
Well, okay, again, the terminology.
Yes.
Therapy dogs.
Sure.
Is that any different from man's best friend?
I don't think so.
I mean, just, you know, a dog is inherently therapeutic. It brings out qualities in you, and it makes for a happier dog. Just, yeah, I, as opposed to a service dog, you know, like a drug-sniffing dog or a service dog for the blind. Seeing-eye dog is they're popularly known. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they say therapy dog. Every dog's basically a therapy dog.
Yeah.
If it makes you feel better. And
absolutely.
Most people feel better when they see their dog, play with their dog, pet their dog, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I like that. And that is your social media sweep for this hour. But when I return, it's our favorite segment of the day, social media from Socialissa. You don't want to miss that.
That'll be the last hour of the show.
Yeah.
That'll be the last hour of the show coming up. And we have an announcement coming your way. Big announcement as promised. The second big announcement of the week in a little over a half hour as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, that would be Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac, one of the most talented and dysfunctional rock bands of all time.
Well, she writes breakup songs and makes them perform them on stage with her. I mean, that's a move right there.
Let me prove my point with Lindsay over here, okay? I am so pleased that we have with us not just our good friend and author of the great new book on the Trump economic miracle that you've got to check out, but also, of course, you see him on Fox News all the time. We love him on the John Carlson Show, but we especially want him to help us scrutinize Donald Trump's latest economic foray into tariffs. That's our friend Steve Moore. How are you this morning?
Hey, John, I'm doing really well. I'm a little disappointed in you. I hate to tell you this. I am not a Fleetwood Mac fan. And I used to listen to that music in the late 70s, and I'm like, oh, my God, my sister used to turn it all the time. Usually I love your music taste, John, but not on this one. Okay?
Well,
I just want to go on record for that.
Well, you can go your own way on that.
Well put. You're very, very clever. But hey, this has been an incredible 3 weeks. And you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to retain my position as your chief economist because of what everything Trump is doing. I mean, I can't even keep up with it. It's so unbelievable. And I love the fact, isn't it amazing, by the way? I know you want to talk to me about tariffs, but you know, here Elon Musk is rooting out all this unbelievable tens and hundreds of billions of dollars of waste in government. And you would think if you believed in good government and you believed in big government, and you were a bleeding heart and you want to help, you know, people, you would be in favor of finding all the waste so that we can spend it on things that really matter for people. But no, Elizabeth Warren is running around the country like her hair is on fire.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say, he's infuriating all the right people.
Exactly.
Elon Musk.
I just don't get it. I mean,
he's infuriating all the right people.
When you're spending 10 $1 billion a year on empty office buildings, $1 billion. Maybe we could put that money to better use, or maybe we could use it to cut taxes, or maybe we could use it to reduce our national debt. And I don't understand why liberals aren't getting behind this and saying, hey, this is a great idea. Let's get rid of the corruption. Let's get rid of the waste. Let's get rid of the duplication. Did you know the U.S. I was just looking up these numbers last night. It's the U.S. General Government Accounting Office. They found almost $200 billion of fraudulent payments in unemployment, in food stamps, PPP program. And almost half that money went to people who don't even live in the frickin' United States of America. They're in Russia, and they're in China, and they're in Uzbekistan. I mean, why would people cheerlead for this?
Because of blind hatred of anything
that Trump does
with Donald Trump's name on it. That's blind hatred. That's right. Does he could find a cure for cancer? I don't care. Not interested. If it's Donald Trump, I mean, that is how, again, just how blindly defiant they are of accepting anything that comes out of this administration, and they're going to lose. I was just talking about the Arizona focus group. Axios just reported on this focus group of swing voters in a swing state in Arizona, all of whom voted for Biden in 2020 over Trump, all of whom voted for Trump in 24. Eight of them are independent. Two were Republican, one Democrat.
Right.
The overwhelming majority. We like what we're seeing. More, please.
That's pretty amazing. Well, it shows how completely out of touch Democrats are. They, you know, we have a cartoon in our hotline today. And by the way, I hope everybody's getting that every morning. Just go to unleashprosperity.com and you can get that for free. But the cartoon is just, you know, a car that's going around and around and around in circles. And it's, you know, the two donkeys behind the wheel, the two Democrats, and one says to the other, well, the GPS just keeps telling us just turn left, just turn left. So, but it's very clever. And it is so true. But I think there's something deeper, though. I mean, you're right. It is true that they're against fighting waste because they hate Trump. But even if it were as Ronald Reagan doing this, they just love big government, even if it's wasteful and inefficient. And they just want more and more and more of it. And part of it is that, did you see that the Lee Zeldin, who was the new head of the EPA?
Can I give an example of that? Here we have when Thomas Homan started his raid on people in the country illegally who are criminal, he swept up a daunting number of people right away. People said, wow, how did he know where they were? Well, because everyone knew where they were in the immigration enforcement. They could have gotten these hardcore gang members and criminals who are in the country illegally. They could have deported them all along. And they just chose not to.
They didn't want to. Right. They were against deporting criminal. They could have gotten control of the border if they'd wanted to. They didn't want to. It wasn't incompetence, although there is a lot of incompetence. It was just they, for some strange reason, they want illegal immigrants into this country. And you know who the biggest opponents of illegal immigrants are? It's minorities.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
So it shows how out of touch these guys are.
So the reason I wanted to spend just a moment or two on trade is you were very upfront with Donald Trump. Your first meeting with Donald Trump, you told him how much you admired his accomplishments in business and what he wanted to do for the economy. Mm-hmm. He said, but I've got to be upfront with you. We part company on tariffs.
Yes. And it is very funny, John, because I just got together with Trump a week ago Friday, actually. The reason I wasn't on your show last week is because I was we had a meeting with Trump in the Oval Office, as a matter of fact. And so, I walk in and the first thing he does, he goes, there's Steve Moore. He's one of the greatest economists, but he doesn't agree with me on tariffs. Every time I see him, he says that. And the thing that's so interesting is that but he's onto something here, I think. He is really onto something where he's basically saying, if other countries charge high tariffs on us, we're going to charge high tariffs on them. And if they want to get us to stop doing that, then we're going to have to, they're going to have to lower their tariffs. Now, in a strange kind of way, now it's a risky strategy. Mm-hmm. It is risky. And it's not Milton Friedman, unilateral free trade.
Right.
But I think it may work. I think this may work where Trump basically is going to force these other countries to lower their tariffs. And if that happens, we will have around the world freer and fairer trade. Now, I know a lot of your purist listeners are going to yell at me for saying this, and I've gotten spanked by some of my friends for saying it, but I think it could work. What do you think?
Well, I think that in the theoretical world, you'd say, well, we know that low tariffs are a good idea. And if you want to maintain your tariffs while giving our consumers lower price goods, you know, we don't mind. But on the other hand, it's all about jobs as well. And what the bottom line is, if Donald Trump makes a credible threat of higher tariffs, and the country that we're engaged with responds by saying, well, okay, look, what if we both brought down our tariffs? Okay.
Right.
What if we both kind of eased the temperature and lowered trade barriers? Then the net result of Trump's tariff threat is lower tariffs on both sides.
Exactly. Bingo. You got it. That's a good way of summarizing what I was trying to say, and you put it more artfully than I did. But, you know, and that's the problem as I think about it. And look, I love Milton Friedman. I was so proud to have gotten to know him towards the end of his life. And he was the greatest economist of last century, maybe the second best economist of all time to Adam Smith. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Adam Smith, for those of us who are talking economics, he taught us the whole concept of comparative advantage, which means that, you know, if Brazil and Colombia make great coffee beans and we make great microchips, then we should trade our microchips to them for their coffee because we're hoping they're better off. That's a very simple concept, but it's an important economic concept. So the law of comparative advantage is important. We make some things better than other countries, and other countries make the things better than we do. I think if Milton Friedman were alive today and we could explain to him what Trump is trying to do, I think he would probably say, hey, yeah, if every country lowers their tariffs, then that's a really great thing to do. Now, here is the problem, though, and I'm going to provide both sides of the debate.
Okay.
It is risky because what if all these other countries say, okay, you raise our tariffs, we'll raise our tariffs. You know, in other words, you could get into a trade war. And we all know from our, you know, history lessons that what caused the Great Depression was, remember, the Smoot-Hawley tariff when we raised our tariffs to like 50% and it shut down the whole global trading system. Nobody wants to see a repeat of that. But I don't think that's the likely outcome here.
No, I don't think it is. And I understand where Trump is going. And I would love to see a more economically competitive world as a result of lower barriers everywhere.
Let me say one other quick thing so you don't think I'm just a sycophant for Trump. Mm-hmm. I am strongly opposed to steel and aluminum tariffs because and you probably know this, you know, you read our hotline every morning, that the effect of the tariffs that Trump put on in his first term on steel and aluminum, they actually ended up losing jobs for America. Yeah. You know why?
I am guessing because for instance, automobile manufacturers.
Yes. Ding, ding, ding. You got it again. John, are you an economist?
Well, no, but I play one on radio.
Well, you've got it exactly right. So what happened was, and this is a good lesson for people. So we put higher tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. So the steel and aluminum price went up, right? Mm-hmm. And that meant that with the car companies and our construction companies and our manufacturing companies that had to, you know, use steel and tariff, their prices went up and it made our products less competitive in the global economy. So it actually ended up backfiring on us. And so Donald Trump, please do not do steel and auto. You know, I know he wants to help the steel workers, but that's not the right way to do it, John.
All right. Steve Moore, thanks as always. Okay. Appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Looking forward to another visit with Steve Moore next Friday on The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Have a good weekend, Steve.
Thank you, John. And by the way, happy Valentine's Day.
Yes. Oh, by the way, yes. Just remember to say that to your wife, too.
Whoops, I forgot.
By the way, I've got some big news for you, my friend. I will tell you about that separately coming up. It is The Commute with Carlson coming up on 747. And our good friend, Cheryl Atkison, Emmy Award-winning reporter, right around the corner on The Commute. Oh, one of my favorite times of the week. I get to talk to Cheryl Atkison. One of my favorite people in or out of the news media, of course, Emmy Award winning network reporter for years for CBS, now with her own national news magazine program, Full Measure. You can watch it every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Como 4, repeats at 11:30 at night. Cheryl, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Is the more important question.
But maybe I'm a little bit out of sorts with you this morning, because here you're doing a segment in the Pacific Northwest, and you didn't do a quick drop-by to hang out with us here in KVI land.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about in and out as fast as I could be, unfortunately. Or I would have.
That's okay.
But yes.
It's okay. Just remember.
Very enlightening trip to Oregon.
Our listeners read your book. Our listeners buy Cheryl's books. Including her latest, which is, I think, your best, which is Follow the Science.
Well, might I turn this around and tell you that you didn't ask for my permission to retire from your job?
That was on my checkoff list, too. I was such a flurry of activity that I think I overlooked it.
See?
I know that's going to be one of the things I miss come April is not being able to have our weekly visits here on the program. But while you were in Oregon, you decided to take a good, long, in-depth look at their experiment. And that's what our states are. They're laboratories for ideas. Some of them work, some of them don't. Oregon decided they would take the therapeutic approach to people using hard drugs, and they would essentially legalize them at the street level by decriminalizing the use of hard drugs. How did it work?
Well, as you know, it was a disaster. And, you know, it was explained to me that there were, you know, this first of its kind law in the nation was pushed by some outsiders from the East Coast, some advocates who kind of promised, hey, you're having all these overdose deaths. This will help get more people into treatment. They won't have a stigma attached with asking for treatment, and there will be more treatment options. Well, none of that happened, unfortunately. And as you know, they're doing a big turnaround now. After 3 years, they've switched things back. We're going to kind of dig into this a little bit. Also, I had an interview his first week in office with the new tough on crime DA in Portland, who's replaced Mike Schmidt, who was very popular for a while. He was the George Soros elected,
yes,
I guess you would say, soft on crime prosecutor. And kind of surprisingly, the progressive liberal voters there in Oregon and in Portland in particular have decided they had enough of that.
Did you hear about the billboards that were when he was up for reelection?
No, what do they say?
Portland has become a Schmidt show.
Oh. Well, you know, they got what they asked for. I mean, this is what people, a lot of communities tried that approach and really did think, I believe, that maybe this would be, they bought into the notion that if you go what I would say is soft on crime, that maybe this, you're nice to the criminals and you get them help and everything comes up roses. But I'm old enough to see the pendulum have swung several times and that never seems to happen. But we do end up trying it, you know, over and over again. So interesting visit to Oregon.
A great segment and a great show. And by the way, a great lesson for progressive cities, hello Seattle, everywhere when it comes to how you approach the issue of hard drugs. That's Full Measure this Sunday, Como 4, 10 a.m., repeats 11:30. Looking forward to talking to you again next week, Cheryl.
Take care.
Have a good weekend. Thanks. Bye-bye. And remember, special announcement coming up at 8:03 this morning. It is coming up on 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, and it's Friday, and it's Valentine's Day. Love is in the air. I hope in your household. Anyway, thanks very much for being with me. Boy, this has been a big week, very big week for me, as I've had to make one big announcement, and now I'm about to make another. If you weren't listening on Wednesday, I announced that after more than 30 years of broadcasting here at 570 KVI, I will be stepping away and leaving radio first week in April. So you've got me for another 6 weeks. And of course, the obvious question to ask is, well, why? And, you know, wanted to make it clear, has nothing to do with any disagreement here. I love this company and I love our management team, and I love our team here at 570 KVI. The going is really good. We are a profitable station in an industry where a lot of people are not, and I've never had more fun. I cannot recall ever having this much fun, and this is a pretty fun job, as I've had in the last couple of months, and it's only going to get better. I mean, it is just a great place to be. So why would I leave? Well, because of an opportunity where I will not just be taking a new job, but I'm starting a new career. As many of you know, I've mentioned it from time to time on the program. In addition to doing my daily radio show, I have also, for the past almost 4 years now, been the vice president for government relations at the Kemper Development Company. Now, what's the Kemper Development Company? The Kemper Development Company in Bellevue runs, owns, manages, and develops the Bellevue Collection. Now, what's the Bellevue Collection? Well, a lot of you have heard of Bellevue Square, and that's part of it. But the Bellevue Collection is a whole lot more than that. It includes 3 hotels, a Hyatt, a Westin, a W, 3 office towers, 200 plus stores, hundreds of condominium residences, and 82 restaurants, from coffee shops to full course dining, some of the finest restaurants in the state of Washington. All of that, plus 12,000 parking places, free parking, by the way, on 50 acres. It is the most visited place in the state of Washington, with the exception of SeaTac Airport. The only place that attracts more visitors than the Bellevue Collection is the airport. And starting April 11th, I will be assuming the duties as president of the Kemper Development Company. So I guess you could say I'm going corporate here, Big Mike. And as much as I would love to be able to do both, I had to make a choice. This is not a job that I was looking for. I knew that our company president, Jim Melby, who's been a friend for many years, just a great guy. We were actually out at the UW at about the same time, though we didn't know each other back then. Jim has been the company president for 25 years, and we knew he would be stepping down. I assumed, when I was asked to lunch by Kemper Freeman, the owner of KDC. Again, everything that I told you about that's in the Bellevue Collection is all privately owned, and the company that's responsible for running it is Kemper Development. So when Kemper wanted to have lunch, we have lunch often, so I didn't think it was anything out of the ordinary. He said, something I want to bounce off you. And I assumed he was going to say, well, with Jim leaving the company as president, we're going to have to parcel out some of his responsibilities. Would you be willing to take another portfolio and make that work? But that's not what he asked. He asked if I would like to succeed Jim as company president. What an unexpected honor and privilege that was, just to even be offered that. And I made the decision yes. So that is why I have to step away from here after a pretty good run and become a corporate president. And it's the corporation I love best. So it's a good match. I cannot thank Kemper Freeman enough, not only for the job, the promotion, but also for the job I was doing before the promotion, and for 40 years of friendship. And we've worked together on a number of projects over the years. And of course, Jim Melby, who was in this, he's been at the company 35 years, but he's been with Kemper as president for a full generation, 25 years, helping to grow and build what the Bellevue Collection has become. So that is what I am leaving here to do. And I will still be around. You know, I'm not, you know, we have some friends. I'm sure you have friends as well who leave the state, you know, for whatever reason. I know a guy who sells real estate in Texas who's pretty familiar to KVI listeners, who retired there and is welcoming people to move to Texas or other places. And I understand why a lot of people do. Me, I love it here. And not only that, the Bellevue Collection is one big reason why this is a great place, a great vicinity to live, a great area. But I also believe that we're going to start turning the corner here in Washington State on a number of things. And I want to be part of it. And I want this station to continue being part of it. And I know that from talking with our management that they are committed to KVI doing that as well. So now you know the full circle, the full story. I wanted to tell you everything all at once, but I couldn't make this announcement until today, and I was really worried that the word was going to seep out that I was stepping back from the microphone here, and I didn't want you to hear that on Twitter or on someone's Instagram posts or, you know, leaking online in some other venue. So I wanted to let you know about that earlier this week. All right. Again, our lines always open on the John Carlson Show. We are not always able to take calls, but we try and keep the lines open at 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757 outside King County. It's the same number, of course, 206-421-5757. You can also text the John Carlson Show anytime with what you have on your mind at 206-421-5757. And I have to say this. When I made my retirement announcement, I honestly did not foresee the sheer volume of response we've gotten.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the text line went nuts. I mean, like, you posted in a couple different places, and those posts, there's the phone right now, going nuts. So, anyway, let me go get the phone. I'll be back with you in a second.
The bottom line is, I did not foresee the sheer volume of response, and it is genuinely humbling. To see that I've apparently had positive impact, not just on changing this or that, you know, in terms of laws and ordinances and policies and whatnot, but people tell me that made a difference in their lives. And I never get tired of hearing that. And it's very wonderful. So thank you all very much. And again, I will be here until April 4th. The first Friday in April will be my last day here. All right, believe it or not, we have a lot of other things in front of us here on the John Carlson Show. I love this story out of Island County. A well-known Republican up there, his name is Tim Haslow, and he is an election observer. And as you know, you have the right, regardless of political party, you have the right to watch the counting of the ballots, the processing and counting of the ballots at your county elections office or your auditor's office. And both parties, and sometimes, you know, third parties as well, will have elections observers. And so he showed up to observe the counting of the ballots. And he was told he needed to wear a mask, that people who watched ballot counting had to wear a mask. And he balked at doing that, and he now is facing a felony charge. Here's Como 4's Jeremy Harris.
Island County Prosecutor Gregory Banks filing a felony charge against Haslow for unlawfully accessing a voting center.
And then I got this charge, and I was pretty darn stressed out. I had never felt that way in my life.
Haslow says he stands by his actions.
I am taking a risk, but if somebody doesn't, things don't change.
Island County election officials told Como News the mandate only applied in the ballot counting room, and observers who did not want to wear a mask could watch from the hall. But Haslow, the former chair of the county's Republican Party, said he thinks Washington law does not allow the auditor to impose such a mandate.
And you concede, as you said, the auditor can set some rules, but in your opinion, a mask mandate to be in that room goes too far.
It's way too far, yeah. I mean, what's next? Nothing to do whatsoever with the mask. What it has to do with is at what point is a politician held accountable for their decisions? What decisions can they make and can they not make at their level?
I need to go back in. I want to go back in.
I stood up for myself. I questioned authority, and you're no longer allowed to question authority in the state of Washington.
Well, you know what? We'll question it from time to time, and I'm glad you did, Tim Haslow. But when I first saw this story, I assumed that this was an incident from 2020 when we were in the midst of the pandemic and he didn't want to wear a mask and it took this long for, you know, the charges to come forward and whatnot. No, we're not talking about 2020. This is 2024, November 2024. He was told he had to wear a COVID mask to watch the ballots being counted. And it wasn't like, you know, there's 27 people in this room. No, just a few people in the room. What a dumb requirement. Did someone tell the Island County auditor and the Island County prosecutor what the hell year this is? It's 2025, or the incident took place in late 2024. Why do you still have a mask mandate? Doctors' offices don't have mask mandates. And those are places filled with sick people. Okay? This is just absurd. So Tim Haslow is asking a really good question. You're making me wear a mask? For what reason? People don't often ask that question. Why? Why? What's the reason? Give me a reasonable reason why you have this requirement that you have to wear a mask. I understand if it was 2020. Okay, we get that. We all went through that. And even that was overblown. But it's now 2024. Why the hell are you requiring people to wear a mask? It's absurd. It's ridiculous. And what the prosecutor should have done was tell the county auditor, why is this requirement in place? There's no public health pandemic going on right now. Why are you requiring this? That's if Island County was ruled by the standard of common sense. Clearly, it is not. And so not only was this not taken care of with a quick phone call, but now it's going to result in possibly a felony charge. This Island County prosecutor is so preposterously overcharging. I mean, this looks like a buffoon doing something like this. If he wants to make a laughingstock out of the prosecutor's office, okay, fine. But good for you, Mr. Haslow, for standing your ground. I wish the other people should have, instead of being sheep, the other people in that room should have done the same thing. No, I'm not wearing a mask. But again, standing up against irrational authority is not something that happens often. Often a lot of people, they just kind of shake their head and go along with it. And it takes someone like Mr. Haslow here to call attention to it. So good for him. All right, you got 21 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Eager to get your text messages, 206-421-5757. We have a very busy 40 minutes left to go, including Big Mike's favorite segment today, social media from socialists, coming your way. It's Friday. It's 26 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. And with Big Mike in for Senior Chief Executive Producer Philip J. Vandervoort III, he's got his social media sweep, his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists.
Absolutely.
Ready to go.
The Twitter 20, I heard it on the X, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And this was from a couple days ago, but I couldn't let it go. Seeing Chuck Schumer and Elon Musk get into Twitter barbs was too good for me to pass up. So this was prior to the confirmation of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as health secretary. Chuck Schumer tweets, confirming RFK Jr. would make America sicker. We are holding the Senate floor tonight to fight back against his nomination by Donald Trump, to which Elon Musk says, farmer lobbyist says, what? So I like that. But in the other realm of socialists on social media, Brian Tyler Cohen, he's a podcaster and frequent MSNBC posts. He posted thousands of Danish citizens are launching an effort to buy California as a response to Trump's attempt to take Greenland. They say they will provide Californians with, quote, rule of law, universal health care, fact-based politics, and a lifetime supply of Danish pastries. That from
sounds like a real serious effort.
Yes, exactly. one more here for the social media.
By the way, should point out that Greenland is actually a territory of Denmark.
Oh,
that,
sure.
That Greenland is controlled by Denmark. They are Danish subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump is basically you can make a good case for making Greenland an American territory. You don't want it to be a state. By the way, you don't want Canada to be a state either.
No.
I mean, if you want Congress to be Democrat forever, make Canada a state and make 41 million Canadians American voters. Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just wanted to point out that what Trump would be offering is, would you like to be an American territory instead of a Danish territory?
There you go. I appreciate the clarification. And as I close out my last social media sweep here, John, I just on behalf of everyone here at KVI, which looks like me.
Yes.
On behalf of me, congratulations. Job well done. Very well reserved. Deserved. Enjoy your retirement and enjoy your new opportunity. I will have a seat next to you reserved on the USS Nimitz when we do the Auburn Veterans Day Parade. Hopefully you'll be able to join me. You are always welcome as part of the KVI family. And that is your social media sweep for this hour.
Okay, so the question for KVI listeners, did Big Mike believe a word of what he just said, or is he just trying to get a complimentary Bellevue Square gift card? Flip a coin on that. No, just teasing. Thanks very much. That's very nice, Big Mike. It is coming up on 8:30. When we come back, boy, did we get a lot of response from you when we had this square off between J.D. Vance and the Pope on the issue of mass deportations and whether it is more Christian to oppose the deportations rather than to support deportations. Hold on. We've got your verdict coming right up. Oh, this is wonderful. Getting text messages from people. I'm shopping at Bellevue Square now. That's nice. Anyway, it is 24 minutes to 9 o'clock. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Well, John, the thing that I've seen most on my text and messages, it's like, what's the parking situation? Can I get free parking spots over at the Bellevue Collection?
No, I had a friend who jokingly said, you know, congratulations on your new job. I hope you'll have a parking place set aside for me. And I said, 12,000 of them. Pick the one that works for you. Anyway, when we were last speaking about this back and forth with J.D. Vance and the Pope, who the Pope kind of picked this fight, you know, and by the way, we understand he was hospitalized overnight, bronchitis, and we hope he will be better soon. But before that happened, he issued a lengthy communique to the bishops of the United States, Catholic bishops, and he said that the, quote, initiation of mass deportations, close quote, was a, quote, major crisis that is taking place in the United States. And he went on to say in kind of a word salad, well, of course, we want orderly migration. However, this development cannot come through the privilege of some and the sacrifice of others. What is built on the base of force and not on truth and equal dignity, et cetera, et cetera. It was just kind of a word salad that gets down to, you know, open borders, but gee, we wish you wouldn't. Or, you know, come one, come all, but let's do it in an orderly way. And the Holy Father went on to criticize what J.D. Vance had said about when he was defending against the notion that it is unchristian to have a deportation program. He said, there's this very Christian concept that you love your family, then you love your neighbor, then you love your community, then you love your fellow citizens in your own country, and then after that you can focus and prioritize in the rest of the world. A lot of the far left has completely inverted that. They seem to hate the citizens of their own country and care more about people outside their own borders. That is no way to run a society. The Pope's response to that was, and I'm quoting here, Christian love is not a concentric expansion of interests that little by little extend to other persons and groups. In other words, the human person is not a mere individual, relatively expansive with some philanthropic feeling. The human person is a subject with dignity who, through the constitutive relationship with all, especially with the poorest, can gradually mature in his identity and vocation. In other words, learned empathy. So I said, I wonder where our listeners are on this. And boy, did we get a lot of responses. What I wanted to know is, since I just read you their own words about, you know, this is applied Christian love. You've got two different definitions there. You got one from the Pope. You got one from J.D. Vance. Who's closer to the truth? Who's closer to, you know, does this resonate with you more on the J.D. Vance side or on the Pope Francis side? So here is where KVI listeners are coming down. Martin, Tacoma, J.D. Vance is my vote. Kim and John, vote for J.D. Vance. Again, this is all in the KVI text line at 206-421-5757. Jeff, listening online in Montana, which you can do to the John Carlson Show at KVI.com. Click the Listen Live button. No one is perfect. We are all flawed. But, oh, how I miss John Paul. That's Pope John Paul. So do I, Jeff. Anne, love of God must come first. Yes. Jim and Derek vote J.D. Vance. Tom and Edmund says, John, I'm a cradle Catholic, and I'm still practicing. I have to differ with Pope Francis and agree with J.D. Vance. Peter in Burien says, I agree with Vance, but it's interesting because the Catholic Church supposedly believes in the principle of subsidiary, that problems should be dealt with by the lowest possible authority. The homeless in Burien should be taken care of by Burien, not federally or even at the state level necessarily. I don't know if that plays into the discussion, but I think it's interesting. It's an interesting point. The issue of immigration, as we're endlessly told by progressives, is a federal responsibility. That is why you have federal immigration law being enforced by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So, yes, local law enforcement, absolutely. Now, if you're local law enforcement and you pick someone up for a crime and they're in the country illegally, yeah, you can arrest them, hold them accountable for committing the crime, but then you can refer them to ICE. That's just courtesy. Okay, local and county and state and federal law enforcement constantly share information. Again, it's courtesy so they can do their job more effectively. And their job is enforcing the law in the United States at either the federal level or the state, county, or local level. So there's no reason why we are law enforcement is not cooperating. Again, that's just a tradition of law enforcement known as courtesy. We have it all the time. When a criminal crosses the border, it is not at all unusual for our cops to help cops in Fresno, California. So let's continue. Elaine saying J.D. Vance was right here. Larry in Kent says J.D. Vance had it more correct. Those closest to us come first, quote, that which means a biblical scripture is coming your way. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That would be Timothy. Verses 5 through 8. Okay. Timothy, of course, was an acolyte of Paul's, a protege of Paul's. All right. Tom in Bellevue says, my family is always my first priority. He says, not to be too snarky, but I hope the next pope is Catholic. That's snarky, Tony. It was Tony Thomas. I'm sorry. I said Thomas. It's Tony Thomas. Another listener, Vice President Vance, got it right. The Pope lost all credibility when he brought the South American God to the Vatican and worshipped it. I don't know what that was.
I don't know about all that. I sent that your way because I thought maybe you could translate, but perhaps not.
I'm not sure if that was a South American God or if that was just a South American tradition. You know, like some people think if you do yoga, you're practicing another faith because yoga has roots, you know, that are not Christian.
That's cultural appropriation.
I don't go quite that far. All right. And I'm not sure what that was a reference to. And Scott said, Jesus said to obey the laws. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and that unto God what is God's. Steve from Shoreline says, good morning, John. I believe VP Vance has the best definition of Christian love. I have depended on listening to you every morning for more than 10 years. I will miss you. May God bless your new endeavor going forward. Thank you. And one last couple of messages here. Stilgar says, I think JD was conflating love with service. They are related but different. The New Testament says that one who does not provide for his family is worse than an unbeliever. Well, that was, you know, repeating what Timothy said. But no, that was the Pope. He said JD was conflating love with service. I think, and the Pope doesn't say you shouldn't provide for your family, but he seemed to criticize J.D. Vance for saying family first. And I think you are right. The Ten Commandments is all about family. Honor your father and mother. Family is the central unit of showing your love toward God, is showing love and responsibility toward your family. Marriage is a sacrament. It's not just a legal procedure. So there you go. It is 47, and I love this last one. The Pope is conflating the Good Samaritan. You're not deporting the victim. You're not deporting the Samaritan. We're looking for the robber to deport him. Okay. All right. It is 47. I think J.D. Vance had it right as well. I think, again, we're talking not about theory, but about applied Christian love. I think J.D. has priorities correct there. 47 minutes after 8 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, Billy Joel, I'm sorry we don't have time for a history lesson right about now. We have only a few minutes left in the show, and it's Friday, the John Carlson Program, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, in Gig Harbor, police looking for a couple of suspected thieves are keeping a sense of humor. I'll tell you why here. Well, actually, Preston Phillips from Como 4 is going to tell you why. A pair of thieves have stolen $2,000 worth of cosmetics from Ulta Beauty in Olympic Village. The cops are on the trail.
On X, police say the Valentine's spirit came early and added, we would like to give them each a nice pair of bracelets to demonstrate our affection.
Just put your hands behind your back and see. Let's see if those bracelets fit.
It's a match set.
By the way, if you go to the Gig Harbor Police Facebook page, you can see the surveillance photos of the suspects. Or you can just look for people who seem to have an unusually heavy amount of rouge. You know, just either one of those. All right. So I've got a question for you, Big Mike. What's the happiest time of day?
Oh, the happiest time of day. Yeah. I would.
I'm not talking about a poll. I'm talking about scientists from University College in London analyzed data from 50,000 adults over a two-year period from March 2020 to March 2022 to find when people are happiest.
Wow. No pressure or nothing. I don't think this is what you're asking, but I find myself at my most happiest when I return home from work and reunite with my sweetie, and we have that period of time together between when I get home from work and bedtime. So that's my happy time. So I would say evening time.
That sounds very sweet and very thoughtful and very loving.
But also very wrong.
Flat wrong. Are you ready for this?
I am.
Mornings.
Really?
Mornings are the happiest time of day, scientists say. They are happier, more satisfied, less downbeat, first thing, compared with the rest of the day. So bad stuff hasn't happened yet. The morning's getting underway, so they probably start with a little bit of optimism. That surprised me until I realized, ladies and gentlemen, since this is a scientific survey, what radio show is on in the morning from 6 till 9? You think it's a coincidence? I think not. The influence of the John Carlson Show clearly going beyond the Puget Sound region. Hey, have a great weekend. Let's talk again on Monday, okay?